Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and that's a little bit of music from Beethoven's Spring Sonata featuring violinist Stephanie Chase. That performance was part of a recital series in New York City in the fall of 2012, in which he played all 10 of Beethoven's violin sonatas on consecutive nights. Stephanie Chase teaches at New York University, and she's given concerts around the world with the top orchestras and conductors, and she's in Aberdeen and Northern State University this week for some concerts and master classes. She's playing a chamber music concert tonight, and then she's with the Aberdeen University Civic Symphony on Saturday night, and she joins us on the line. And Stephanie Chase, thanks for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Well, it sounds like you've got a busy couple of days here with master classes, rehearsals, practicing, and concerts. A pretty busy couple of days here.
I'm basically staying out of trouble because I don't have much free time, and I'm practicing a lot while I'm here too.
So. Is this more like a residency than just a concert appearance?
I would call it a residency because normally when I'm playing a soloist with an orchestra, I generally go in and have a couple of rehearsals and then play the concert and then leave. Sometimes there can be a master class, but generally speaking, I would not be playing a chamber music concert along with performing with the orchestra. So I definitely would call this a residency. I'm enjoying it very much.
Yeah, do you like also having the opportunity to meet with students at Northern State and understand you'll be going to Aberdeen Central tomorrow? Do you like having this opportunity to spend some time with young musicians?
Yes, I do. I do because, I from my own experience, I have found that sometimes having this kind of interaction with a musician or somebody in the field that you're interested in, you know, can have a big impact on whether you pursue it or not, and how enthusiastic one might feel about it. So I'm always hoping that I will, you know, be some sort of inspiration to somebody somewhere.
Ignite that spark in some young musician.
Yeah, I hope so, or at least encourage it.
Yeah.
help the spark along somehow.
Now, your own background, you grew up with music as just a normal part of your everyday life. Your father was an arranger and composer and musician, and your mother, a violinist, was music when you were growing up, just a natural part of daily life, like dinner and supper?
Yeah, I'd say so, because, as a kid, what you have around you, I mean, your world is very small, and so what you see your immediate family doing and your friends is, I think, very influential. And so my parents, in addition to being musicians, of course, they taught students on weekends, and my mother also taught during the week, but away from home. But some kids came after school to have lessons with her as well. And so I was sort of surrounded by violin music much of the day. And my two older sisters at that time were also playing the violin, so that was probably another influence. So I actually started myself. We had a small violin at home, and I picked it up and tried to play on it. And my mother let me play by ear for about 2 years before I began getting lessons from her.
Do you remember at all that first time you picked up the violin?
I don't remember the first time, but mm-hmm. I do remember that I was really intrigued by it, and I enjoyed it, and I would drag it all over our house. We lived in a rather large house with, a staircase, and I think one day I left it on the staircase, and my father stepped on it. And I was, unfortunately, the violin was damaged, but I was actually ready to go to the next size at that time.
Timing was good.
I mean, it was not irreparably damaged, but he did step on it one day.
What did it feel like as a kid playing the violin? Because it's a difficult instrument to get a pleasing sound. It's not like a piano. Anyone can walk up to a piano and hit a key and get a nice sound. Did there come a moment when you were a kid, or did it start pleasing, or was there something else to the violin when you were playing as a kid?
That's a very good point you're making, and it is difficult to make a good sound on the violin, but I think, because my mother was a good player, that I heard the quality of sound that she made, and I think that was something that, I could aspire to, because you have to connect to the sound, but you have to know what the sound should be like. It's sort of like an equation with, say the good sound is on the other side of the equal sign, and so we have what do I sound like now and what can I do to make it sound better? But if you know what you want it to sound like, that's half the battle. That's true of interpretation and, you know, much more advanced things. And the other thing that helped me a lot was that I have perfect pitch. So I hear pitches exactly. And a lot of people have approximate pitch. You know, it's relative pitch. And so I think perfect pitch for me was very helpful because, as you said, on the violin, you don't have, it's not like pressing down a key and having a note come out. We're always dealing with distances along the fingerboard. And so we play by touch, you know, and sort of sensation, actually. We're constantly sort of working our way up and down the fingerboard, but there's nothing to guide us except our sense of touch and then also our sense of the distance along the string.
At what point when you were younger, when you were learning the violin, that you felt like you're getting close to what that sound that you heard your mother play, that you were reaching your aspirations?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, that's always an ongoing process, I have to say. I began playing in public already when I was about 2. And then I won the Chicago Symphony Youth Competition when I was 8. And I was actually playing in a lot of music clubs and women's clubs in the Chicago area when I was a kid. I traveled with my parents. My father wrote little arrangements for me to play because of the nature of, first of all, my age and my abilities, but also the audience. So I played little arrangements of short works, and some of them were sort of popular pieces in the era. And my mother would play duets with me. She helped tune the violin, and she would announce. And so I probably had a pretty good sound already at that time, but I was playing on a small violin. And small violins don't have the capacity. They don't have enough. If you think of the inside of the violin as a resonating air chamber, it's too small on a smaller instrument to make sort of the optimal kind of sound. And then also, as I got older, I got a better violin. I actually play on the violin now that belonged to my mother, and it was made by a fellow named Petrus Guarnerius, or Peter Guarneri. It was made in 1742 in Venice, and it's the Guarneri and the Stradivari family are probably the most renowned violin makers, you know, still, not just of their era, but they remain so. And I think that there really is something about the Italianate sound, the sound of the instruments made in Italy by the great makers. And so so that is something to aspire to as well, because the instrument itself has an inherent sound. And so it's a combination of the sound that I make through how I play, how I use the weight in my arms, for instance, but also the instrument's own sound. So if somebody else picks up my violin, there might be some areas where you would recognize that it's the same instrument, but it probably wouldn't sound like it does when I play it. So there's that aspect as well. And we're always looking to improve the interpretive qualities of what I play. So I'm playing Mendelssohn Concerto, for instance, while I'm here, and the piece that I've played many times over the years, but every time I go back to it, I'm still thinking about, do I want to change something? How could I improve this phrasing? How could I make it more beautiful, more effective, more virtuosic? You know, whatever it seems to want.
You're listening
so
to...
It's an ongoing process. That's a very long answer to your question.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing process.
Well, as long as we're talking about your playing, let's listen to a little bit of your playing here, Stephanie Chase. It's a little bit from the Korngold Violin Concerto.
Thank you.
That's just a little bit of Stephanie Chase performing the Andante from Korngold's Violin Concerto, and she's playing with the Aberdeen University Civic Symphony on Saturday. She's playing some chamber music this evening. And Stephanie Chase, listening to that, I hear this lovely singing tone, just very elegant, and there's a lot of, I guess you'd use the word control in the way that you play there. But when you hear that, as you were just talking about, you're always trying to be even better. When you listen to a past performance, what does that sound like to you?
You know what? Sometimes if I listen immediately after the concert, I'm super critical. And then later when I go back, I think, well, that wasn't so bad. That was pretty good. I might do this a little differently now. So sometimes with a bit of time after a performance in listening to it, I'm a little bit more generous with myself about how I like it. Which reminds me of a story. I have a friend who's a clarinetist, and he made a recording of the Brahms Clarinet Quintet and from a live performance. And then he was one day in a store, and they were playing the music over the speaker, and he was there, and he happened to be the Brahms Clarinet Quintet. And he's listening to it, and he thought, oh, I wish I played it like that clarinetist. He has such control of his breath, and that's a nice line, and the intonation's good. Mine's not that good. And then, of course, it turns out that he's listening to himself. He sort of didn't recognize his own playing even. It was very funny because he's a very self-critical person.
Well, that's good that it was that way. He didn't listen and go, oh, that guy's awful.
Yeah, I suppose that could also be the case.
Yeah.
But I'm always hearing things that I would do differently. But, and especially it's difficult to put out a commercial recording because sort of the nature of the way it's done. And then also, it's there pretty permanently. So I always find commercial recordings that I've made the most difficult to listen to immediately. And usually I don't listen to them for a while, and then I listen from the other room the first time. I might be in the kitchen doing something, and I'll put it on, and so I don't hear all the details, and then eventually I might be able to listen to it, with full attention and not be too dismayed.
Well, Stephanie Chase, I'm sorry to say that we're out of time, but I want to thank you so much for joining us on Dakota Midday, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your time in Aberdeen, and you have a great couple of concerts.
Well, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to the concerts, and I'm really enjoying my stay in Aberdeen, and everybody's been very welcoming, so thank you so much.
Thank you. That's violinist Stephanie Chase. She performs Bartok Sonata for solo violin this evening with members of the Aberdeen University Civic Symphony. That's at 7:30 at Northern State. And then on Saturday evening, she plays Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto in E minor with the full Aberdeen University Civic Symphony. That's at the Johnson Fine Arts Center. That concert begins at 7:30, but Stephanie Chase will have a pre-concert conversation at 6 in the Berggren Recital Hall. And for more information, you can visit aberdeensymphony.org. And that's it for this edition of Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Thanks to all of our guests on today's show. I'm Carl Gerke. Stay tuned. Here and Now is coming up next.